podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lantronix, maker of the XPrint server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by lynda.com, learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like chili lime pistachios. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 158, recorded on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Owl.
I'm Ron Richards.
And we are Gina-less.
Gina-less. She's been struck with the I have a child's plague.
With the kid sickness.
The germs.
Yeah, believe me, I understand all about that.
To the house, to the...
I'm pretty sure every other week so far in 2014, I've had to take a day off because of my sick kid.
I'm sorry.
Or one of them anyways. And that will continue tomorrow. So, fun times. You've never had a kid before, Ron.
I continue my perfect attendance due to my childless existence.
Your childless ways. So we have no Gina, but it is our pleasure to welcome somebody to the show that we've definitely talked about quite a bit on the show, Kosh Dutta. And I mean, you kind of need no introduction. Kosh, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be on. I've been watching the show for quite a while now and glad to finally be on.
Every once in a while, we get a little Easter egg from you on Google Plus in the way of a screenshot or something. That kind of has told us that, oh, wait a minute, Kosh is watching.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm suddenly a little nervous here.
I can hear what you're saying about me, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. Really do appreciate it. I've definitely been trying for months to figure out how we can get you on the show. And, you know, obviously we're going to be talking to you a lot about things. We have a great discussion planned with Kosh. We also have, well, news, further details about Amazon's 3D smartphone, kind of leaked information at least. Google's new camera app, that kind of broke shortly, you know, did the usual thing, broke pretty soon after the show.
Yep, of course.
And of course, big Google news usually does that. But very cool stuff and a whole lot more. But we're going to kind of bypass the top news segment this week and just get to talking to Kosh because we have you here and it's been quite a while that we wanted to get you here just to pick your brain about things. Yep. So for people who, you know, maybe don't know you, just real quick off the top here, Cyanogen Inc., formerly of Cyanogen Inc., actually, but before that to Cyanogen Mod, and you're still kind of doing some open source development for Cyanogen Mod. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm still contributing where I can on the open source side of things.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You're also an independent developer of apps, Allcast, which I know we've talked about quite a bit on the show, Voice Plus, Push SMS, Clockwork Mod, of course, which is kind of a recovery replacement for Android, Tether, Desk SMS, Helium Backup, RAW Manager. It's kind of busy.
It's his greatest hits.
I know,
like,
right?
Yeah, it's like you got a full album.
You have a full album of apps.
Yeah, I forget I had all those too. It's been like, you know, 5 years as an indie Android dev and like slowly building up a portfolio of apps that somehow have managed to take off despite like all my expectations otherwise.
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of a great place to start. So you've been doing this for 5 years. How did you get started with Android development and what are you doing right? Because so many people, I think, that follow Android development closely and, you know, follow it online and everything, you know, your name is recognizable because you're obviously doing something right. As a developer, you're doing great things with your apps. And, you know, what is it about kind of what you're doing and where you started that makes you successful at this?
I'm not sure, honestly. I think just sometimes I happen to be at the right place at the right time, or I recognize the opportunity quicker than most. I felt that's kind of how I first started with Raw Manager. At least I felt that there was this need, you know, for people to, you know, install aftermarket firmware on their phone. But there was no real easy way to do it at the time. Like, people were, you know, pushing files to their SD card from their computer. And I was like, why not just build an app that does this? And that was actually my very first Android app that I wrote. Mm-hmm. So I found this need, this niche need that, you know, catered to a few million people, and kind of started from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to imagine this, you know, as a developer targeting a niche need in the, that isn't already covered, that's got to be a really big challenge now versus 5 years ago. I mean, the landscape is so different.
Certainly, there's been, I feel like the green fields that we had when Android first came out are not so much anymore. Like, I come up with these ideas. Like, I have, like, the equivalent of a dream journal next to my bed where I have ideas, like, in the middle of the night. I'll just write them down in my notebook. And then I'll look at it the next morning, and I'll Google, and there's, like, five other people already doing it. So it's getting a lot harder because I would say, you know, software companies and developers are taking Android more seriously and even doing Android-first type plays. And like, all these opportunities that were there are slowly drying up because, you know, there's just so many more eyes looking at for problems to solve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so in that sort of scenario, is it about being first with an app, or is it now about being best at an app?
Right.
It's a little bit of both. I would say being first certainly helps. Like, to speak about Allcast, I was probably one of the first people to, you know, really jump on the Chromecast platform when it came out last June or July, I think. Mm-hmm. So, like, being first helps with press. And if you can consistently get stuff out the door quickly and consistently get, like, high-quality apps out there, I found that just having, you know, a brand built around your software certainly helps, too. Because, I mean, there's other apps that do what Allcast does.
Right.
But, you know, just by the brand I've built over the course of 5 years, I've got a leg up on the competition there.
Absolutely. And like you say, Google giving developers kind of a chance to get in early on something. You know, they did this with Google Glass, right? If you were able to get in early on Google Glass, you could potentially, mm-hmm. you know, put your claws into something that could be a real big kind of game, you know, get a lot of eyeballs pretty easily because you were there early. Same with Chromecast. In fact, when the whole Chromecast thing happened, you kind of, you know, you did some development with Allcast, and then functionality, I guess, was kind of removed from Allcast that made it stop working with the Chromecast. I don't know. So what about that experience? How has Google been when it comes to handling a situation like that? From my understanding, it was that Allcast was working with an SDK that maybe wasn't, you know, it was like non-public or wasn't necessarily published. Then it got pulled. Who knows why? How has Google been when dealing with situations like that in their relationship with you?
Well, yeah, Allcast was using a undocumented API. It actually reverse engineered the protocol that I think the Chrome extension was using to send videos across or something like that. Or I looked at the JavaScript. I don't remember at the moment.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's understandable that they removed it. What was a little concerning for me was that after they removed it, there wasn't much like communication with the developer community as to how open the platform would be. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, if I'm going to invest time into this platform and build apps and stuff, like, I want to make sure that I can actually publish them, right? Like, I don't want to sit here and, like, build stuff and then find out, like, 6 months later that, you know, it's only going to be available for, you know, certain Google partners. And that's actually the road that Google took with the Google TV. So that was kind of what I was expecting. And, you know, in a happy coincidence, they did decide to open it up to essentially anybody, which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That was probably a good outcome as far as that's concerned.
Well, I mean, going back to what you said when you reverse engineered it, what is that moment like? Like, do you get giddy when you pull something apart?
And, yeah, no kidding.
And go
right?
back and realize, like, oh, aha! Like,
wait a minute.
Yeah. Like, when you sit down and be like, I want to make this work. Like, what is the kind of the troubleshooting or the reverse engineer process? I mean, not in layman terms, not overly technical, but like, is there that moment where you realize that you found the piece of the puzzle that you needed and now you can go off and do what's inside your head?
Yeah, there is. Like, a lot of it is playing around with network packet sniffing tools so you can see what the Chrome extension is sending to the Chromecast, or C, what your Android phone is sending to the Chromecast. And yeah, there is the aha moment. You're like, oh, I see what you're doing there. Read it in an app. It's awesome.
Does that moment normally happen at like 3 a.m. on like a whole bunch of Red Bull or like?
Yeah, I would say that's happened at 3 a.m. too many times. And the problem is, like, once you have that moment at 3 a.m., that means that you're staying up till like 9 a.m., right, to finish it.
Right, because you can't stop there. It's like,
yeah,
right.
No, exactly. Exactly. Just total coincidence, but probably worth mentioning. 3 a.m. has some significance with CyanogenMod, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Has something to do with a yacht or something like that? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't actually.
Oh, there was some sort of code.
Is there an Easter egg or something?
There was an Easter egg, and it had something to do with Kosh taking a yacht or something like that. I don't know. It was in a CyanogenMod thing. Anyways, got a lot of people. We did put a post up on Google Plus for people to submit their questions. And so we got a bunch of questions. That was actually one of them, which is, you know, like, what's up with the yachts and stuff. So I had to look into it today to even know what they were talking about. But apparently it was an Easter egg. Apparently it was an Easter egg that you had no idea was there. So there we go. There you have it.
I think there was an Easter egg in. Yeah. We had this Android Tips app that was built into CyanogenMod, I think 7.
Okay.
Which had like various legitimate Android tips, and then one of them something about like Kosh and yachts.
All right. And I think it's triggered if you're up at 3 a.m. or man, I can't even remember. I never
maybe that's it. I don't even know what triggered it.
Silly stuff. So, you know, this was going to be my first question because I think it's probably kind of top of mind for a lot of people. You know, you've worked with the CyanogenMod team closely for quite a while, obviously. And when CyanogenMod kind of incorporated and became Cyanogen Inc. Almost a year ago, I would say. It's pretty close to that, and man, how time flies. You were with the team. Of course, you are not now currently with Cyanogen Inc., and we definitely had a lot of people wondering kind of what happened. People are just kind of curious why you've chosen to go it alone after being with the team for so long at this point.
I wouldn't say I've departed from the team. You know, right. I'm still working. I'll still help out on the open source side, but I mean, I have a long history with, you know, Cyanogen, but I also have a longer history with my own company that I've built over the course of 5 years. Sure. And, you know, it's not possible to give 100% to two different ventures at the same time. So that's essentially what it came down to. I had to make a choice, either, you know, do something that is going to, you know, result in me giving part time to both efforts, or, you know, really commit to one. And that's essentially what it came down to.
Absolutely.
Which we can respect. I mean, yeah, as someone who's totally spread very thin,
well, I think I
can relate.
Yeah, Coach, I think you make a really, really great point that maybe people you know, don't understand right off the top, which is that you do have a brand. And that brand has been built over the course of 5 years. Your brand is separate from the Cyanogen brand. And that can actually be a pretty lucrative thing when it comes to development. If people know to look for the apps that you create because you've built a reputation around them being great apps and services, and you think about these things differently than others, then there's great upside to that. Absolutely. makes perfect sense. So, you know, obviously a lot of kind of your background, a lot of the reason that people know of you and your work is kind of steeped in this kind of root and ROM culture that mm-hmm. that is on Android. And one question that I've had, and I merely asked this because it kind of reflects my own usage at this point. You know, back in the day, I had a Motorola Droid, and very early on, I learned to root and ROM the Droid, and, you know, I would flash new ROMs all the time, you know, whatever it took to bring new functionality to my device. Then I got and at a certain point I was flashing because I needed to in order to stay current because there were no more updates.
Those nightly bills. And yeah, I remember that.
Exactly. Yep. Just to stay current. And same with the Galaxy Nexus. Now I'm on the Nexus 5 and I have absolutely no desire to do this. And so it just kind of has me wondering, like, are these improvements at the core of Android, kind of making flashing ROMs less imperative? Do you think there's kind of a change going on in the root and ROM community right now?
I think we have reached what I'll call like peak flashing.
Sure, sure.
There's always going to be like this subculture, this, you know, of users that want to like really tweak their ROMs out. and like do all sorts of crazy stuff and really be on the bleeding edge of, you know, software and hardware. And yeah, I think that user base, like in the at least from what I can tell from my analytics, is around 15 to 20 million people. And I'm not sure if you're going to see explosive growth beyond that, but I think that there is an opportunity, which is what you know, CyanogenMD is pursuing to provide a better experience, you know, by platforming off of what these root users want. A lot of manufacturers have done a really awesome job. I'll call out HTC for one, of keeping their more recent phones up to date at least. Yeah, like one of the primary draws, like you were saying, Jason, was to, you know, keep your phone up to date because your phone was abandoned by Motorola at the time. HTC is doing a pretty good job. Like, I think their latest phones are at least running 4.3 or 4.4 now, and they're consistently keeping it up to date. So I wouldn't say that it's going to go away, but I'm not sure it's going to be like, I wouldn't say aftermarket is going to blow up though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it really has seemed like a very, well, and it still is, a vibrant community of very passionate technology-minded individuals. It just seems, in my mind, it's become a little bit less of a necessity, whereas at a certain point I felt like, man, if I don't do this, I'm being left behind. I'm screwed. But I guess I also host an Android show, so maybe that's part of it too.
Well, I think also you saw lots of different kinds of applications that you could only do if you had rooted or if you had only done a ROM. And now, as we've grown, a lot of those are now available on the stock. Or you know, like, you know, some of that functionality is no longer, you know, you don't have to go through this labyrinth to get to the end result. You know, now it's a little easier for people to access. So I'm kind of more curious what the future of, you know, the ROM flashers and the modders and stuff like that will do, that we don't have, you know, that people who aren't flashing ROMs, like, what is the new functionality that they'll be able to unlock by doing that or test with it? Does it become more hobbyist at that point, or are really the people who are pushing the boundaries of the platform, the people who are flashing ROMs and doing that unique kind of development?
I think that the guys flashing ROMs are always going to be the ones pushing the boundaries, and it's always been kind of a hobbyist thing. I don't think that's going to change, but I don't think it's going to grow or shrink in any fashion. I think it's kind of like matured and stabilized. I would compare it to, like, you know, people running like really obscure distros of Linux or something, right? There's always going to be people running like bleeding edge stuff that are like doing really crazy things that, you know, end up showing up in like two versions of Android later or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously Gina's not here. She was so sad that she had to miss this show. She was really looking forward to it. I guess that just means we're going to have to invite you back, which of course we're going to do. But she did give me a couple of questions, one of which we've kind of already asked about Allcast. Another question that she had was, do you think that Google has been a good steward of Android as an open source project?
Yeah, I certainly do. Actually, one of the things I want to talk about regards to your previous question about the necessity of rooting and flashing now. Google has actually kind of removed that need to some extent by providing what are like really extensive system updates through, you know, their Google Play services.
Absolutely.
And this kind of came about because manufacturers, OEMs, weren't shipping, you know, system updates quick enough and just essentially abandoning, you know, millions and millions of users. So they're doing a great job, I would say, Google, of stewarding both the open source project and, you know, making sure that the consumers that, you know, bought whatever phone are also receiving regular software updates as best they can without manufacturer involvement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I was just on the Play Store yesterday kind of looking through, and, you know, when you go to the Play Store on your device, it shows you I was setting up this Sony Xperia Z2 tablet.
It's a fancy tablet you got there.
Anyways, it needed an update to Play Services. So when I went there, it showed me my rating and everything. It's funny to look at the ratings for Play Services because it's such a misunderstood thing. Yeah. Like, you see all these ratings, 1-2 stars, like, oh, it does take up space in my phone, and it does nothing, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, you're just sitting there going, no, actually, it does everything. It is.
Yeah. It's where the magic happens.
Yes, exactly. You just don't understand. It's a hard thing to explain when it comes across looking like an app. But
it's funny.
Well, cool. Thank you for answering that. Now, kind of shifting gears a little bit. This is kind of a hot button topic, I think, for you. I'm pretty much
pretty sure one out of every three, you know, comments, questions that I saw all across the internet when people found out that you were going to be on has to do with removable storage, namely.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, here it comes. SD cards on Android. So just to kind of catch people up here real quick, if you didn't already know, Google is kind of, you know, taking a stance where they want to kind of excise SD cards from the Android experience, basically saying that it just makes things overly complicated, both for developers and for users. And, you know, of course, Google has a horse in the game. They have their cloud services, and I'm sure Google hopes that if they give you 16 gigs of onboard storage and they have cloud services to serve up the rest, that's going to be sufficient. You know, and people obviously sit on both sides. Ron, you are an avid SD card user.
I was, not anymore.
Well, I guess you don't have a phone that has an SD card slot.
Yeah, no, I mean,
have
like,
you missed it?
Seen the light.
I'm actually, as I was prepping my app for the arena that we'll get to earlier, I was actually lamenting the lack of an SD card slot in my tablet because, as you'll see when I get to my demo, this app is the kind of thing where if I had several SD cards with different amounts of data, I could utilize it. I believe that from a philosophical standpoint, I believe we should have removable storage because that allows you to expand and contract as you need and gives you more control of the device. But I ever since I had my Nexus 5, I haven't missed it.
Right. Like, it's one of those things that like when you had it, you can't imagine not having it. And then when you don't have it, well, at least for me, I can only talk for me. Everybody falls on completely different sides of this fence. Now, Kosh, I know your stance is more or less that you agree with Google that you know the SD cards can be kind of a pain in the butt for both users and for developers. What exactly is different about this? Is a common misconception, I think, a misunderstanding about this. What is different about removable storage on a PC versus removable storage on a mobile device, particularly Android in this case?
I actually don't think there's a difference. I call the SD card on a mobile device is the equivalent of like a floppy drive on a computer. You don't see them anymore.
Mm-hmm. True.
Like what it comes down to, at least from the user side of things, like developer side, why the reason users like SD cards is because, you know, they're a cheap way to get, you know, data to and from a computer, store a lot of data on your phone. And cheap being cheaper than storing it in the cloud. Like most people are like, I prefer an SD card because, you know, I don't want to have to worry about mobile data rates. But, you know, mobile data rates and mobile data speeds, those are both, you know, things that are going to improve over time.
Sure.
You can look at, like, the cost of a gigabyte of storage on an SSD was like, I don't know, like $5 per gig 3-4 years ago. Now it's like 50 cents a gig. It's like these costs are going to go down, and what you end up having is like this legacy technology, which right now is cheaper, versus this new technology, which is going to be as cheap in the course of like 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and not to mention cheaper in the sense that, you know, I think people want the SD cards because when you buy a device, like lately your options are like 16 gigs or 32 gigs, and you're going to pay an additional $100 for the 32 gigs versus the 16 gigs,
right.
Even though the 32 gigs is going to get eaten away by internal storage, you know, internal storage of the ROM and whatever services that, you know, the manufacturer decides to load on there, and it doesn't leave much space for what I think a lot of people would like to do, which is just stack their drive filled with movies and music and everything. It's just a different way of thinking about it. I guess the question remains if it's right for right now.
And I think the big aspect of it, and if you ask me, like, why, you know, I was pro SD cards and I liked it, but ever since moving to the Nexus 5, I haven't had one. I haven't noticed it because I think that my resilience on the cloud has dramatically increased in the last year or two. So much to the point where, you know, someone in the chat room asked me whether I had a 16 gig or a 32 gig phone. I had to check and I realized, oh, I have a 32 gig phone. I have 17 gig available.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, you know, by watching the show, everyone knows how much TV I watch and how much music I listen to. I'm streaming all that because the moment that I'm not actually connected to the internet to get that data is really only when I'm in a plane and I've got what I need, you know, to get me through that 5-hour flight to New York.
On the other hand, there are folks that don't live in places that have abundant access to mobile data, every nook and cranny that surrounds you. You know, they're out in, you know, places where they don't get that kind of connectivity, and as a result, their content is locked away in a locker that they can't get to.
True.
But I completely agree. So from a developer standpoint,
How is developing an app difficult when you're dealing with having an SD card versus not? Because I know that was kind of part of the reason right. that Google is doing this, and I know I've read some comments of yours that have kind of alluded to this fact. How does that make things more complicated?
A couple of my apps deal with the SD card, like ROM Manager does. Like I have to deal with, you know, the internal data storage, and then some devices have an internal SD card. Some devices also have an external SD card, and there's no APIs to enumerate and access these unless you start digging into internal, like, internal APIs, which you generally shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. Then I have Helium, which, you know, one of the first requests is, like, I want to back up stuff to my external SD card, but there's no API to do that. I have to, once again, like, start digging around internals of the phone to figure out where their external SD card is and then store stuff there. Mm-hmm. So it's a pain in that sense because there's no API to do it, and every manufacturer implements things differently.
Sure.
In addition to SD card performance is often really slow, like on the gallery I worked on in CM, one of the complaints that we got in our beta group was that our photos are loading really slow in this app. And I was like, well, we've been testing it and it's just really, really fast. And then I noticed that the people that were complaining were running on devices with external SD cards. So what I ended up doing was loading a phone up with a ton of photos on the external SD card. And there you go, really slow photos loading because the SD card storage was just too slow to provide like that seamless, snappy, you know, photo load at startup.
I see. And then that kind of comes down as a, you know, a negative on the developer because it's like, why can't you make an app that pulls those photos faster? It doesn't work all the time. I don't understand. Yeah, no, I can completely understand.
You have this thing that's being inserted into the phone after it has been certified by Google, which provides like an inconsistent user experience and inconsistent performance.
Yeah. Interesting. So there you go, folks who asked. There's kind of a
there's good, your answer.
Yeah, there's your answer. Now, what about app updates? What would you say is the responsibility of a developer to continually update an app that's been released? The reason I ask is because, you know, now we're kind of five years into this grand experiment that we all love called Android, and there have been a lot of, you know, apps, a lot of legacy apps that have been created, and eventually they get abandoned, and sometimes that rubs people the wrong way, but, you know, there's probably good reasons behind that. How and meanwhile, the people that bought the app, you know, spent $1.99 on it 4 years ago. Like, how long can, you know, you expect to get updates on something along those lines? Do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head. Like, if you look at like Windows, for example, in 5 years, Windows has shipped, you know, two or three versions of Windows, which you've had to pay for. VMware, I've bought like four versions of VMware Fusion for my Mac, and I've bought two upgrades for my OS X Lion. And, you know, and when I'm buying like a web service, I'm generally paying like a subscription or something. Then on mobile, you have this situation where Apple sets a precedent where you buy an app and that's it. Like, you own the app forever. And then a developer, I don't know, is obligated, I guess, to keep that app up to date. And what you end up having is exactly what you're saying. Like, 5 years have passed since I've written ROM Manager, for example. And like, I'm doing this rewrite, but I'm not really incentivized to do the rewrite. Like, what I have out there works, but I'm still on the hook for something that a user purchased like 5 years ago at this point. So like, when I have to make the choice, essentially a business decision of between like pursuing a new product, which will actually result in more, more revenue or whatever, more increased user base versus maintaining an existing product. It's a no-brainer choice. What I would like to see from Google and Apple is like a way to do upgrade pricing within the App Store, because I don't think they had really thought it out fully. And, you know, it was kind of like a new venture at the time, like, yeah, hey, let's just make apps go, you know, go out there, you buy them once and then you get it forever. And that's not a sustainable business model for the publishers, unless the publisher is choosing to do something like subscription. I tried subscription actually with Desk SMS. And a lot of the feedback I got was like, why isn't this a one-time purchase? And I was like, well, I have these recurring server costs.
Right.
And like, it can't be a one-time purchase. Like, your one-time purchase has a lifetime, which means at this point, I'm going to, you know, two years out, I'm losing money on that purchase, right? And at which point it's coming out of my pocket. So there needs to be some... Google basically needs to come in and say, okay, this is how we see, you know, mobile app publishing working in a sustainable fashion, because it's not going to work, you know, even 5 years out or 10 years out, right?
No. Where it's just diminishing returns at that point.
Right, exactly.
If any returns at all.
Right.
I mean, it was significant when you first developed and when you first got paid, and then 10 years later, that's pretty much pennies.
Well, I don't hear the Flappy Bird guy complaining. That's
increments. Well, that's true. But is Flappy Bird, I mean, is he even
offering? I'm just going for the easy joke. But,
there you go.
You know, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, it's a good point. And I wonder if you see some sort of like licensing model, or, you know, you pay 99 cents for the app and it lasts it for a year or something like that. And then you have to re-up or something. I would do that.
Yeah.
And that would make
you... For something that you truly buy into and that you appreciate the time and you use the service has great value to you. I mean, and more, I would say, that maybe this hasn't always been the case, but more and more Android users are willing to pay for the apps that they really like, that really work for them. And that kind of is, you know, part and parcel for the higher quality of apps that exist now compared to 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So
that said, I think, like, you know, publishers should be on the hook for doing like point releases and bug fixes and stuff like that, like up to a reasonable extent. But when you start doing like major revisions or rewrites, that's when like there needs to be something built into Google Play to really handle that kind of scenario better.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, taking ROM Manager, for example, is it completely off the table in that situation where it's been out for so long? The only way to remonetize it would be to start a new app, like a new entry in the Play Store. Or do you feel compelled to update the app that's already existing?
I mean, I want to update the app. Yeah. And I think that's eventually, this is what I'm going to do, but because if I don't do that, like, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to have my feet put to the flames. Fair essentially enough. By my users. Right. So, I'm going to update the app, and it certainly needs an update. So it's on the top of my list at the moment.
Right on. Let's see here. Well, so you kind of alluded to one thing that you wish was in Android, some sort of kind of versioning upgrade mechanism for payments. Would you say that's the single most important thing Google needs to address in an upcoming version of Android, or is there anything else that's kind of top of mind that you just really wish would end up in a version of Android you haven't seen yet?
I don't know. I think Google's doing a pretty good job. I don't really have any wishes outside of, like, they've got a lot of permissions built into the Android framework that would be interesting to access from, you know, a non-system, non-platform app. Maybe reworking the permission system to have a finer granularity and more flexibility would be a good step. Mm-hmm. I know that we certainly would love that in, you know, in this CyanogenMod project, to do a lot of what we're doing. And stuff like Privacy Guard, for example, lets you selectively revoke certain permissions from an app versus, you know, when right now you have the Android model, which is where you have all your permissions that the app needs up front. And then you have the iOS model, which is an on-demand type, you know, request when the app needs to access your contact list, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good progression for Android.
Cool. And then a couple more questions here. Gina had another one here. She talks about the Google Experience devices. Gina asks, does the Google Experience layer on top of Android create an unwinnable game for other companies who build their own Android experience? In your opinion.
I don't think it's unwinnable. Obviously, Samsung isn't losing when they're pulling in like $20 billion a quarter or whatever it is, right?
Fair enough.
But it does provide Google a significant amount of leverage over their partners. And you're slowly seeing them tighten that leverage. And in my opinion, I think it's for the betterment of the final, you know, consumer product. They do this through their, you know, their GMS licensing, where they have certain requirements of the OEM that they have to pass, not only in terms of quality, but also in terms of like where you know, the Google stuff has to be placed on the home screen, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's unwinnable. I think Google is out to make an ecosystem where a lot of different players can win, but they want to make sure that they are one of the most relevant players.
Absolutely, as they should.
Right.
Let's see here. Ronnie Terhern, I can't pronounce his last name, from the Google Plus post asked, I thought this would be kind of interesting. What's the first thing you hacked together for Android? Was it ROM Manager, or was there anything before that? I think, you know, people who are getting into development are like, where do I even begin, and where did you begin?
My first thing I actually wrote was Super User for the G1. I discovered the root for the G1. I actually think someone from Google messaged me or something. I don't know what is basically like whispered and said, "Hey, they left a Telnet session open on this phone." So I was like, "Okay." So I released the root for the G1, and then I wrote the first Super User for that. And I think you could still find it on Subversion or something somewhere.
That's awesome.
Graveyard of code.
There you go. That's cool. And then finally, before we move on, unless Ron, Eric W. wrote in to say, what do you think about the possible merging of Chrome into Android? We keep hearing about this, and actually, particularly leading up to I/O, where there's the potential that this might actually happen sooner rather than later, some sort of integration of Chrome OS into Android. You know, there's obviously, you know, Google's talked about it plenty. What do you think about that? Do you think that's going to improve the experience? And also, you know, for the perspective of a developer, does that pose any challenges for you, do you think?
I'm not sure what their end goal is with Chrome and Android. Like Chrome, they actually have like a Chrome Android Fusion in Chromecast. Chromecast is running, you know, I think it's running Android as the HAL and then running an instance of Chrome as the application layer is what you see on the screen. So they've already started on that road. I don't know if they're going to actually push that as an initiative into Android phones themselves, because then you end up having like these two platforms running side by side. And that kind of raises the question as to which one is the real Android platform going forward. Which one are they going to deprecate? And furthermore, I don't see Chrome as like a platform to do mobile native apps. I'm not sure that's the right user experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'm sure, you know, hopefully we'll hear something about this at I/O. I'm certainly looking forward to I/O. By the way, I am going to I/O.
What?
Apparently I am going.
What?
Apparently I am going.
Are they
going
to let you in?
Yeah, they're going to. Well, yeah, that's what I'm told.
Because as of the email I saw mere hours ago,
yeah,
you were not going.
No, apparently
I'm
going.
How did that happen?
We'll talk about it, but apparently I'm going. Kosh, will you be at I/O?
No, I didn't even bother signing up this year.
No?
All right, yeah. I knew I liked him.
I have a better chance of winning the Mega Millions, so I was like, I'll go do that instead.
Good idea.
And you won the Mega Millions, you jerk.
Right.
we'll see what happens at I/O. I'm sure we have a lot to look forward to.
Will we see what happens at I/O?
Well, you know, Ron, you... never mind. I should never have said anything. Now I just feel awful.
At least on air.
Well, it's important.
I know. No,
one of us will be there. Anyways, well, Kosh, it's really just fascinating to kind of talk to you about these things. You are at the forefront of Android development right now, and... we could talk to you for hours. We have a bunch of news to talk about, though. Will you join us for some of these news stories, talk about it a little bit?
Absolutely.
Right on. All right. Before we do that, let's thank our first sponsor of today's episode. That would be Landtronics, a new sponsor for All About Android. Whether you're at home or in the office, and this has been my experience, printing from your Android devices, Chromebooks, even your Kindle Fire, it can all be a challenge. If your printer isn't already cloud print enabled, well, you're out of luck. You know, for the longest time, personally, I've just kind of learned to accept that printing from my mobile device is just a frustrating, practically unattainable experience. And even, you know, I don't have the smartest printer at home. It's an old printer. It's a dumb printer. It isn't smart enough to take advantage of the cool stuff that Google's doing with cloud print. XPrint Server, Cloud Print Edition, is kind of the solution here. It's an easy to set up, easy to use solution for cloud Google Cloud Print enabled devices, allowing wireless and mobile printing from Chromebook computers, Android phones, and tablets, even the Kindle Fire. And it works with the printer you already own. It worked with mine, whether it's wired or wireless, USB or network. It's the first and only print server officially certified by Google for cloud print and Android printing. You print to your existing printers. You don't need to buy a new one. It's compatible with more than 4,000 top brand printers. And it's just easy to use. It's automatic discovery and setup of printers. You just open it, plug it in, and print. Advanced configuration available via their web interface, which makes it really easy there as well. One XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited Android devices. It also allows your USB printers to be shared with all users over a network. So it's perfect for your home. It's even better in the office. It works with large multifunction printers. The Cloud Print Edition is $149.95 and supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. Cool stuff. So here's what you can do. Visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer. Use the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit, and at checkout, enter the code TWIT. And we thank XPrint Server, Lantronics, for their XPrint Server. And you guys should check it out, xprintserver.com/twit. Here it is. It's tiny.
Where does the paper go?
You put the paper in this little Ethernet port. You fold it up really small. There you go. Thank you, Lantronics. All right. Speaking of hardware, let's get into the hardware section. Back to rumors.
All right. Back to some more rumors. I know. So last week.
It's just that time of year.
Last week we were marveling at the rumors related to the Amazon phone that has been linked, that the rumors were linked to. Some thoughts around 3D interface and stuff like that. Well, Boy Genius Report is back with some more details, supposed details about this new phone. We're going to see gesture controls that enable the user to tilt the device to display additional information, differentiating the device and making it easier to operate with one hand. Okay. Some examples include seeing behind icon labels, revealing their function.
Okay.
All right. Why would I want to see behind the icon? Anyway. All right. tilting in a map shows Yelp ratings on the map. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
All right. But I feel like that's just a layer.
Yeah.
IMDb ratings appear in Amazon's video store. Okay. That's great. And a product images might cycle through when looking at a product. Okay. These are all kind of, I guess you just kind of, with one hand, you just kind of tilt and show me another image. I guess it's some sort of thing like that. I don't know. Also, automatic OCR pictures taken with the phone that include text within the image.
That makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Right there. Because if it's an Amazon phone, you know, they're going to want you shopping with it in some way, shape, or form. Exactly. So if you're at a store, take a picture of a box.
Turn that store
OCR,
into a catalog.
OCR, and it syncs up with Amazon. The gestures to look around things and everything, man, I suppose I reserve judgment. Well, kind of a little bit reserve judgment until I see it. But again, just kind of sounds gimmicky.
I feel like that's the kind of thing that when you read about it, you're like, that sounds silly. And then when it's in your hand, you're like, oh, cool.
Maybe.
I see it. Yeah.
So. I don't know. Is any of this kind of getting you excited, Coach? Does this sound like, between the tilt, the gestures for seeing behind icons to 3D kind of UI, anything intriguing about this for you?
You know, I feel like an old man because I'm still not sold on 3D in movie theaters. So.
I don't think you're an old man. I think a lot of people agree with you on that. That was kind of my comment last week, which is that, like, you know, this was 3 years ago that they started developing this when 3D was kind of, when everybody was trying to tell you that 3D is what you wanted. And maybe they just stuck with their guns.
And they told us those 3D televisions were going to take off. And,
they didn't.
I have not seen that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My TV came with 3D glasses, which have never even been unpacked.
Right.
So.
Well, in that regard, though, has 3D, at least in televisions, just become a feature that you just get nowadays for the most part? Or
are they
still
broadcasting in 3D? That's what I understand. No, they're not. They're the Blu-rays that have the enhanced 3D or whatever it is. I don't know.
There was a 3D channel, but I think I just heard that it's done because no one was watching it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are a few others, but yes, I don't know. very, very interested to see what Amazon has up their sleeve here. But so far, the leaked information is different from what we're used to seeing. But is it necessary? And I don't know the answer to that.
They're probably testing a little bit of everything, I'm guessing, right? Sure. Like they've got like these enormous R&D labs that this might be one of a dozen different phones that they have testing. Who knows?
Fair enough. And who knows what we'll actually see when it gets released. So there we have that. In news of devices that actually exist, though, right now, this is the Sony Xperia Z2 tablet. I was handed this yesterday to review for next week. So next week's Before You Buy.
That's a pretty tablet.
I'll be reviewing this as well as probably next week's All About Android. I'll talk about it. But yeah, it's like,
man, do you remember the Wedge tablet that Sony had? That remember the one that was that went kind of triangular with the curve?
Oh, that opened up, the clamshell one that opened up?
Tablet P, yeah. Remember how thick that was?
Oh, yeah.
Now look how thin this is.
Well, that was obviously very different. That was a clamshell, and boy, I did not enjoy that tablet.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, Sony's thing, they're just going for the ultra light, ultra thin. I mean, this thing, you kind of have to have it in your hand to really believe how thin and light it is. But $599 for, I think it's the 32 gig version, $499 for the 16 gig version. What did you push?
It was this thing right here that just said touch here, and I couldn't help myself.
That marketing has not been effective on me, apparently, because I avoided touching there.
Yeah, but look at it. It's got the most vivid tablet display.
Uh-huh.
Look at that. Look at X Reality for mobile.
All right.
Triluminous display.
Sony definitely has their words for things, apparently.
Wow.
So I'm going to be playing with this for the week. It's on sale May 4th. It has a quad-core 2.3 gigahertz Snapdragon 801. So nice processor there. 10.1-inch TFT display at 224 pixels per inch. And it is IP58, so that's dust and water resistant.
Oh, cool.
Which, if you know, it does the thing with the ports where if you want to get into you really have to dig into it with your fingers in order to pull them off, which I guess is kind of a necessity for
if you're going to be water resistant. Yeah, well, when you're taking your tablet in the bath, you don't want to have those power connectors be available.
Because let me tell you how many times I take a tablet in the bath.
Let's be honest. Let's be honest.
All the time.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Here's a flashback for you.
Hey, there we go. Sony Tablet P.
Yeah.
There it is. Yep.
Driving home the bezel going through the image. Yes.
It was a seamless device. Yeah.
Yeah. There wasn't a whole lot you could do with that tablet. That was the quintessential interesting idea, just didn't quite work when you have that bezel going right through the middle of the display.
Yeah.
Anyways, Sony, and Sony does that. They try new things, and Sony absolutely has its fan base. So, I don't know. I'll play with it for the week and let you know what I think.
Very interesting. So, continuing the rumor runaround.
I suppose I should have the rumors together.
We've been talking about the end of the Nexus line for the past couple of weeks, about speculating whether Google was going to retire the whole idea of the Nexus and the Nexus 5 was going to be the last phone. Well, those rumors be damned. All right, we got new rumors now that are pointing to plans that involve the production of a lower-priced entry of the Nexus line of phones. This entry-level or mid-range device would cost less than $100 unsubsidized. Wow, I can't say that.
Subsidized.
And run a MediaTek processor. So, whether or not that's the case or not, that's a good question. Whether that's going to be a lower-priced Nexus phone for a $100 phone. It's really kind of hard to argue that. A Nexus 6 rumor keeps popping up as well. This time, those familiar with the matter are saying to expect an LG device similar to the unreleased LG G3 with a 2K screen resolution on a 5.5-inch panel, in-house LG-made processors that would mean this bypassing of Qualcomm Snapdragon processors and a release of October or November, as has happened in the past few years. So which one do you take more belief in? Do you believe in a $100
they both could exist.
Yeah, that's true.
essentially, because the $100 would be the other Nexus device. I don't know, Koch. Do you think the Nexus brand needs a lower cost kind of entry device? I mean, so Motorola certainly proved that that it can happen with the Moto G.
I've always seen the Nexus brand as like the reference device for developers and for Android manufacturers. So I wouldn't be surprised if both of those rumors were true. I mean, MediaTek doesn't really have any presence in AOSP right now. So if Google was doing a MediaTek device, that would make perfect sense because, you know, in China, they're shipping hundreds of millions of MediaTek devices every year, and there's no AOSP support. So it's a natural evolution of the platform to go embrace that and also release a reference device for it.
Well, and I think going back to the Nexus 5, we said that, you know, a $300 phone unsubsidized, that's impossible, and yet they did. why would a $100 phone be impossible? And talk about, you know, eliminating the barrier of entry to a platform. Everybody who's been on the fence, $100, that's a real easy decision to make, you know.
Absolutely.
So
that 5.5 that Moto G, it keeps coming back around to that. It's just like Motorola did something really cool with the Moto G,
and then they sold it.
Pretty well, Google. Yeah. and then Google's like, oh, we got to get our own Moto G. What are we going to do?
5.5 inches, though. That's big.
Well, that would, and I would imagine that would be for, that would be for the Nexus 6.
Yeah, for the Nexus 6.
The more expensive one. I'm not sure if the article said what the lower cost one would be size wise, but yeah, probably smaller. But yeah, probably good for developers too to kind of have a range of Nexus of reference devices, as you say, and not just one single reference device, but how does my app work on, you know, the best of the best and maybe the less spec'd, you know, devices to kind of cover both bases. So so in wearables, of course, last week during the show, it was kind of Google Glass and anyone can buy one day. And Google says they sold out in that one day sale. They sold out of their allotted inventory for the sale and, of course, teased the possibility of more to sell very soon. So, but we don't actually know how many they sold.
Could have been 10.
Yeah, they could have been
10 Google Glass. We've sold out. Good job on us.
Now, Coach, you have a pair of Google Glass. I feel like
I do.
Yeah, do you wear the glass out and about? Or
I did for a few weeks, but then I stopped. I'm not... I like the idea. I like where it's headed, but I didn't find it was useful enough for me to wear glass on a regular basis. I think it's more of a – I think the main use case right now, honestly, is to take pics of your kids and whatnot. So
I can attest to that.
It really helps you capture those moments quickly.
Absolutely does. But you got to be wearing it in order for that to happen. Although our youngest is – literally going to walk any day. And I find myself putting them on more and more because I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this. But it doesn't happen. Maybe I'm distracting her by wearing this thing on my face. She's like, I'm not walking right now. What are you wearing?
By scrambling to find it and put it on your head when you think that it's...
Don't walk yet. I need to put this on. Oh, man. Okay. And then finally, LG, which is their G Watch. You know, we've kind of seen...
Watch.
They're Guach. We've seen pictures of it here and there, but you know they're not kind of the official finalized form. Well, LG unveiled more information and finally shows off a number of photos of its upcoming watch on its website in its completed state, running Android Wear, of course. The new watch will have a always on screen that never sleeps, they say on the site. That's interesting. Screen that never sleeps.
What is the battery?
Immediately, that's what you think. It's battery? What is the battery life? Does it have some sort of a low power mode? Something like that. Also available in stealth black and champagne gold.
I like the stealth black.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, black, so you can be stealthy, you know?
Black. People won't see it on your wrist because it's stealthy.
Because even though the screen is never off.
Yes, right. Not so stealthy. That's true.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Looks like a nice watch. I'm curious to.
I still got to say the Motorola round face one. That's the one I want. I mean, the Guach is interesting, but I want that round one. It's a round display. Well, I don't understand why people aren't freaking out about that more.
Like, I think it's pretty awesome. Yeah. And you know, we were talking earlier about finding an opportunity and jumping on it early. In the case of, you know, hardware manufacturers, man, that's exactly what Motorola did with that, because it's not like creating a round interface is undoable because they built it into kind of, you know, they gave that tool to everyone that wants to develop for Android Wear. It's just Motorola had the foresight to say, okay, that's going to be difficult, but we're going to be the first ones to do it because I guarantee you that's going to get a lot of excitement.
I'm telling you, man, I want a round monitor. I want like a porthole, right? And like that, like it's got to be next. You do it in a watch, just do it bigger.
From a development standpoint, Kosh, are you considering, kind of tackling stuff on Android Wear? What's your take on that?
I'm going to play around with it. I'm like playing around with the Glass 2, but yeah. I'm not entirely sold on the platform yet. Like I was on Chromecast and like I was on Android when those two were released. I could be completely wrong, but I'll wait it out and see how it plays out. Of course, I'll be hacking on it, but
sure.
I'm not sure if it's going to be like a large portion of my time dedicated to it.
Yeah. Well, cool stuff. There we go. Still, I don't know if we know a release date of the LG Guach, but
I don't think it mentions it either. But no. we've been told later. And thank you, Brian. How cool is that? It's a circle. It's round.
There we go.
There we go. Yeah. See, that'd be so cool. No, but they were saying Q3, like Q2, Q3 or whatever for the watches. So, cool. Interesting to see the website come out though. When I load up my browser, it says the site is in Korean, which I know it's not. But
oh, really?
Yeah. There's something wrong with the character encoding on the page. Interesting. So, yeah. Anyway. Hmm.
So. I didn't get that. I guess my browser speaks Korean.
Oh, well, there you go.
Let's take a quick break and thank another sponsor of today's episode. That would be Lynda, lynda.com, offering thousands of online video courses in software, creative, and business skills. Whether you want to learn to develop an Android app, Java, improve your language skills in JavaScript, protect yourself from the recent Heartbleed bug. With a lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of high-quality and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. Lynda.com has a course called Building a Note-Taking App for Android, actually, which teaches you how to build a complete mobile app from scratch using the Android SDK and Java to get the job done. You'll learn to create a project, save data on a device, control your screen layouts, and more. There's also Android Studio First Look, which gives you a first look at Android Studio. There you go. The new IDE for building and packaging Android apps before its official release. I tend to gravitate more towards the music, the programming from a music perspective, and actually today's arena kind of gets into that a little bit. So there you go. And of which Lynda just has a ton of music production related content that I've just been really, really enjoying. Over 2,400 courses with more added weekly. All lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality. This is not homemade video they're going to just find thrown up on YouTube. Lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day new versions hit the market. They're super quick at this stuff. You'll always have the very latest skills. At lynda.com, the instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their fields. They're passionate about teaching, and you know their courses are from all experience levels, a beginner, intermediate, advanced. Doesn't matter who you are or what your experience is, you're going to find something that kind of matches that on Lynda. Watch from your computer, your tablet, your mobile device, whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours. That's a marathon. Each course is structured so you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find quick answers or read along with a video. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great, of course, if you're a professional in the field. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructors using the same project assets that they do. So you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses, 2,400 for free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. Love Lynda, man. Their videos are awesome. You should check it out. And you can, because it's free for 7 days. There you go. All right. Let's take a look at some apps. So
So the Google kind of snuck one by us last week.
Yeah, they do.
When we weren't looking, we saw a new camera app. Actually happened to me as I was out and about, and I went to go take a picture, and I couldn't find the camera because the icon changed.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, what is this? So we got the new app here. I think the key element of this new application, new camera app, is that the two things is that adjusted the viewfinder, giving you more of a bar at the bottom, which kind of reflects the actual kind of field that's being photographed, and also took me forever to find the controls.
Yeah. You got to kind of know they're there.
Absolutely took me forever. But what's neat is that what I found was when you take a photo, right, the photo goes, and then it kind of peaks. Yeah, so it's like, oh, look at that. But
I'm over here.
I got really mad for a little bit because before I noticed the new lens blur feature, I couldn't find the manual adjustments for exposure.
Because
you have to go into the settings and turn that on, which is something I live
simplifying.
For.
Simplifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Google, more and more, they're simplifying their apps. Yeah.
So, but pretty neat, though.
And I like this. Turn it around. You're not doing vertical video. There you go. Okay.
There you go.
No more knack. You can still record it like that, of course, but but people will make fun of you.
But then the big adjustment is the new lens blur mode.
Oh, right.
So in addition to photosphere, panorama, camera, and video, now we have lens blur.
Let's see if I can do this.
Which allows the – and there was a tutorial.
Okay.
I don't know if you
can – here's how you do it. You go ahead and take it, and then you raise slowly to get a little bit of that extra perspective. Yep. And now it's processing the image. And then once it's done processing, you can dial in the background blur more or less. Kind of knew this was going to happen, right? You knew that they were going to break out the Google camera app, and this has just kind of been, you know, what Google's been doing with all of their apps lately.
Yeah.
Have you played around with this, Coach? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's awesome. I definitely want to see more Instagram type filters built into the Google camera and the stock cameras.
Now, what's neat about this though is that so once you have your lens blur photo taken. There's a neat little website called Depthy, which allows you to upload the photos that you've taken with the lens blur, and then we'll turn them into – it will parallaxize them, which is super cool. Brian, I don't know if you want to pull up the link. They show you the example of it. But you can – you know, by extracting the data of the basically two photos you're taking, it uses a kind of a web-based kind of interface to parallaxize the photo. Actually, the next link, Brian. The Depthy one? Yeah, there it is.
There you go.
Yeah. So now as you move your cursor over it, see it? Isn't
that cool? A little bit of that. Yeah.
And then if you scroll down, they've got three modes. Well, they show you how they do it. They've extracted out the data from the image. And then if you go back up, there are different modes. So you can turn off blurring and just leave it on hypnotize or turn on dramatize.
Just stare at it. Not get anything done all day.
So that's a neat little way of hacking the photos, you know, basically hacking the photo data.
Absolutely.
So, which is pretty cool. Which
don't do that. You're putting me to sleep.
But it'll be interesting to start seeing these. I mean, once people start posting these photos to Google+, think about these effects that are happening on the photo level.
Yeah. So web. That's what I'm wondering. I was trying to actually work with it, and I think maybe you. Like once you post it up on Google+, you're posting the rendered version, and you're not posting the one that has the metadata.
Right.
So I didn't look into it long enough to like find one that has the metadata. I imagine you just have to pull that off your device or something.
Right. Yeah.
So. And maybe not the uploaded one, but
yeah. So the Google camera.
Well, so we've talked a lot on the show in the past as far as like Google's design with the camera app. Coach, did they get it right this time? Because I never really liked the embedded menus on the previous app.
I think it's great. I think it's a lot cleaner, a lot simpler. They changed up the menus to – what did they have before? They had that weird like bubble-type menu that would pop up, and if you get something wrong, you have to go dig through the menus and find it again. Mm-hmm. They've done a great job fixing all that. It's a lot more usable if you want to tweak stuff on this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little – it shook me up at first because I didn't know where anything was and the stuff I used weren't there. But once I got it, I think it's great. And also having the whole bar, the whole bottom bar being clickable.
Yeah.
You know, like basically you don't have to actually hit just one dot. You just have to hit this lower section of the phone and anywhere with the picture.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Yeah, so
– that's great. And also this brings Photosphere to everybody, right? If you had, you know, a
an Android device that didn't have the Google's stock camera, you probably didn't have access to photospheres or the capability of creating them, and now you can.
Yep.
So every device will have two camera apps now, potentially. There we go.
It's neat to see the iteration happen, though. I mean, like, yeah. I feel like every time they release a new camera, it's a big enough thing where it's like, okay, this commands my attention. I need to take a look at it.
So what's next? What's the next one?
Jeez.
What are we going to see?
I can never get Photosphere to work right.
You think?
Yeah, it does not.
What the heck is going on there?
I don't know. Like, I look at Mike Elgin's all the time, and his are perfect.
Did it take you, like, 2 seconds to do that Photosphere? He's like, I don't know.
So my tip is to sit in a swivel chair and spin around while taking the Photosphere.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
It's hard because you got to get the parallax just right. I mean, if you want to do it perfect, then you mount, from what I understand anyways, and I've never done this successfully myself, but you mount as close to the camera on some sort of a tripod, and that's where you swivel around.
Right.
So that the parallax is always the same. But then, you know, then that requires you to always have
extra
hardware with you when you want to do a photosphere. That's kind of defeats the purpose of...
I almost fell over trying to take that photosphere.
It looked like it.
Yeah. Didn't work out well.
Looked like you did fall over. But although it kind of had its own kind of charm to it.
A disgusting charm.
It's like a Frankenstein of photosphere.
It's a monster.
Let's see here. Another big app update came out recently. I think maybe this was yesterday, and I downloaded it this morning because it still hadn't updated automatically. New Hangouts update. Ron, I'm sure you'll love this.
Oh, yes.
It finally brings the merging of Hangouts chat and SMS threads into one combined entry. So what's that?
Which I hate.
Which you hate.
Yeah.
Of course. Yes.
I'd rather have the conversations be controlled by the pipe than the person. I don't know if I'm texting them or if I'm chatting them. I see, and maybe it's because I'm old, and maybe it's because I'm...
What you want is for it to be smart enough to know that, oh, the other person has Hangout, so opt for that automatically.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The other person's SMS, so opt for that automatically.
And there's enough people that I talk to that are on Hangouts because they're on Gtalk on their desktop or whatever the equivalent is now, but they don't have an Android phone, and so they're on SMS. And I just the whole idea of it just hurts my head. So.
Yeah,
I get a little confused too. Like, if you send a message through the unified client, like, where is it going? Is it going through SMS?
Right.
If it sends through SMS, are they not getting it on their are they not getting it on their computer? Like, it's a little confusing to me.
That's my biggest
happening under the hood.
And that's my biggest concern, is that are they getting it? You know, and you shouldn't have to worry about that. And so I'm glad that maybe we're too far in the node. Like, maybe this is just an ignorance is bliss kind of scenario where the regular user, like, oh, I'm chatting my friend, and it doesn't matter where they're chatting from.
Right.
But these are the things we worry about. So, I'm glad that we're on the same page.
Well, and it gets even more and more confusing when you start talking about Google Voice because...
Yes, yeah.
You know, I can send voice messages through Hangouts, I believe, but it's hard for me to know what they're seeing. Are they seeing my phone's number when I text, send an SMS, or are they seeing my Google Voice number? And it's super confusing. Along those lines, an APK teardown at Android Police, as they always do a great job, does reveal more voice integration work into this app, including possibly a smart reply option that always replies via the service that the received message came in on. So if somebody sent me a message to my Google Voice number, my reply would automatically be out via Google Voice. If it came in through my regular number, it would be, that way as well. I think that's pretty good. And also that third link, Brian, I think is the most important part of this entire update, which is that if you... If you type / pitchforks... You can send an angry mob to the person that you're chatting with. If you type / pony stream, My Little Pony.
Is that licensed?
I don't know.
Like, did Hasbro sign off on that?
If they did, they're awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Hey, Google got David Hasselhoff. I'm sure they could get Hasbro.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going for all the H's here.
Pony stream. That's very funny.
There you go. So
look at Google getting cute.
Always do that a little bit.
And the app update continues.
I know, it was one of those weeks.
It was one of those where, like, everybody had to hit their ship date. Chrome Remote Desktop is now available on Android. So you can tap into the Chrome extension for remote access using your Android device, and that's pretty cool. Have you installed it?
I did. I was playing around with it earlier here. I have it on the tablet.
There you go.
Enter my PIN. Look away for a second. Avert your eyes, children. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So
look at the smudges on that, man.
Boom. That's a little weird.
Is this your
my desktop here? So, yeah. Although for me, my cursor's like way off. Like you can't see it because the resolution's so tiny. But my cursor's all the way over there, even though I'm doing this. And then when I go over to my screen to see where it's at, it's actually not over there. It's somewhere different. So. Kind of works for me. I honestly, I think it's probably my desktop more than it is this app because I've had other issues with Chrome Remote desktop. So, but there you go.
There you go.
Nifty that you can do it on the tablet and you don't need to pay pay for a service.
Yeah. So I might install that myself. And additionally, now the YouTube app now allows for Chromecasting of live content and it removes the preloading capabilities.
Oh.
So there you go.
Well, I don't know. Did we use preloading? Coach, did you ever use it?
What is preloading?
There you go. See, that's probably why they.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's like I turned it on, and then every other day I'd get a little nag that says, "You never watch your preloaded videos. Do you want me to turn it off?" Apparently, Google got sick of warning me that.
It's so a nagging mother-in-law.
Let's just take it out. He's obviously not using it anymore. He's going to take the shirt back in. Let's just give him the receipt. And then finally, we talked last week about Virus Shield, an app that pretty much did nothing, even though you paid $4 for it. Well, heads up for anyone who did purchase Virus Shield, the app, it basically you're getting a full refund. Google's going to issue a full refund and $5 Play Store credit as well.
Wow.
Saying, oops, our bad. Is this their bad? What do you think? Actually, this is a great question for you, Coach. Do you think Google does a good job kind of vetting the apps that do go into the Play Store? Or are there improvements that could be made there? What do you think about that?
I mean, you have to walk a fine line between having a well-kept walled garden and essentially a free-for-all. I don't think Android would be as successful as it is today had they not allowed everyone to publish in this Play Store with absolutely no friction. I think this was a case where it should have never made the top paid apps list or whatever mm-hmm. showed up on Play, and that would have probably prevented this from blowing up like it did. So there does need to be some level of curation involved, I think.
Sure.
I think this particular move by Google to refund and give the credit is purely PR. It's because so much attention, so much
PR.
Yeah, it was totally mm-hmm. I wouldn't expect them to see that. I wouldn't expect. To see this from any other app that is found, through the vetting process or whatever, it is. It's just because there was so much attention to this one. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So there you go. So, Coach, I know you have a hard out in 10 minutes, but we have an ad and then we're in the arena. So it probably makes sense for us to just let you go at this point so you can get to your evening plans. I'm sure you're going to wine and dine and all that fun stuff.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no, honestly, it's our pleasure. And I mean, you come highly requested from the fans of the show. So I know I'm speaking for everyone when I say thank you for coming on and just being a guest on the show. And we would absolutely love to have you back sometime.
Great. Yeah. Hope to catch you again sometime.
Right on. This is just your opportunity to tell people where they can find your work, where they can follow you online.
Oh, I think both of them. Let me see if I can point right. Oh, my finger doesn't let me point in front of the green. But yeah, you can see it right there on my banner. G+2 Coach from my Google Plus and @Coach on Twitter.
Excellent. All right, sir. Have a wonderful evening and thanks again. We'll be in touch.
Cool. Thanks.
All right. Keep up the great work.
Take it easy.
Bye. All right, everybody. So before we get into the arena, a musical arena this time.
It is a musical arena.
Let's thank our final sponsor of today's episode. That would be NatureBox. It's easy to talk tough about eating right. But when you're starving at 3 p.m. like I was, and you're stall cranky and lightheaded, the evil vending machine or what we have back there, the bookcase filled with junk food, it can seem like your only friend. And let me tell you, I hug that bookcase of junk food every once in a while
because
it's all I
junk.
Have, bookcase of junk food. Don't give in. Keep your eye on looking and feeling great and head over to naturebox.com/twit. And wouldn't you know it?
We have one.
I have one. Now this,
I have
this
one right
is,
here.
This is a Nature Box. You know it because it says Nature Box. on it. It says NatureBox, and it's a box. It has not been opened. Wow. I don't know what snacks are in here.
It's unique, dude.
I've cut it open because I didn't want to hurt myself.
Say, yeah, let's see.
But, you know, so we'll go ahead and open it for the little camera here. Okay, please pardon our crumbs. So maybe there will be crumbs in there, a little informational stuff. So we've got sriracha roasted cashews, already talking my language. Are you kidding me? Dark cocoa almonds.
Yeah. Ooh.
I got to finish the show before I can eat. Blueberry almond bites. Peppery pistachios, Big Island pineapple. I'm pretty sure the Nature Box just has some person whose full-time job is to name these things tantalizing names.
The copywriting is top-notch.
So, Ron, I implore you to test out one of these while I read the rest of the
ad. You're going to make me do it live.
Yeah, well, hey, somebody's got to do it, and I need to be able to read.
All right, I'm going to go for the Big Island pineapple, these dried pineapple rings.
There we go. NatureBox sends these great-tasting snacks right to your door with free shipping anywhere in the U.S., and, you know, these are healthy, satisfying snacks. As you saw, there's over 100 more than some of the others. Barbecue, kettle kernels, French toast, and granola, all with zero trans fats, zero high fructose corn syrup, and nothing artificial. NatureBox is the snack happy gift that keeps on giving. Order a 3, 6, or 12-month subscription for that special person in your life that you want to have snacks.
This is fantastic.
We'll see.
I would eat the hell out of this.
Yeah, but I'm really tempted. Oh man, it looks really good.
If you got to read, I wouldn't do it.
I know, but I really want to. This is good. This is going to be hard for me to stop here. So remember, get a 50% off of your first box. Go to naturebox.com/twit. Stay full, stay strong. Go to naturebox.com/twit and eat some of this stuff. We thank NatureBox for their support of All About Android. See, I'm still tempted, but there's talking to be done.
Why don't you toss your TD some of those, huh? Some snacks over here would be nice.
Here, it's kind of the shape of a Frisbee. Let's see if this works.
This is not going to work.
Oh. Are you kidding me?
You got it right in my mouth. Good shot.
Oh, okay, excellent. All right, cool. Pick that up later. All right, thank you, NatureBox. I can't wait to eat this later. All right. Thank you, Vanna. All right, Android Arena time. Let's go. Stop it. Stop teasing me with food. Let's go to the arena.
Okay.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
I think I figured it out.
That was really good. What did you figure out?
You know, as each of us is showing off our own app.
That's when you can eat.
That's when you can eat.
Right, there you go.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to have to wait a little bit longer because we have to go into last week's poll. We had 4 amazing apps. I heard from some people that said this was the best arena ever.
It really was.
They installed all the apps.
It was a really solid arena. And this morning when I checked the rankings were very even. Mm-hmm. I was curious to see
they
how
still
they
still are very even.
But there was a lot of movement.
There was.
Yeah.
And Mailbox reigns supreme, 27% of the vote. Bonza Word Puzzle came in second. There you go. Thank you for the golf clap. Second at 26%. App Eater, which was Gina's app, which I actually used last week because I needed to uninstall a ton of stuff off my phone.
There you go.
And it was really handy. 24%. And then Huey, probably because it requires extra hardware and stuff.
Probably, yeah.
Anytime we have an app that's tied to hardware or geographic region, it doesn't do so hot.
It's important to note that this arena, thanks to Wade County in the chat room, puts me at 5 wins.
Oh, Wade County's keeping track.
Compared to your 3, Gina's 4, and guests' 3 wins. So as of right now, the rankings are in, and you, sir, are in last.
I suck.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know what? We have a 50-50 shot here.
We do.
It's just you and I. Yeah, so this is this is a coin toss right here.
We need some sort of like handicapping when there should be extra points when there's only 2 of us. I don't know. All right, well, you came in last, so you're going to lead us off. So
all right. So I changed mine up last minute. I had something completely different planned, and then I saw yours and I was like, "You know what? There's only 2 of us. Let's make this a themed arena around music apps."
Sure, that's what you said. You're like, "Wait, he's got a really good app. Let me change mine."
I thought mine was pretty strong. But I think I thought it would make for a better arena.
Yeah, no, I like it up.
And I've been sitting on this one.
And we haven't done a theme in a while, and this is a theme that is close to both of our hearts for different reasons.
For very different reasons.
Which I think is important. So
mine is called Easy Band Studio. And what is it? It's basically, it's a music accompaniment tool for musicians. And, I find all the time I have ideas for songs in my head, or, you know, I'm feeling particularly musical and I want to put something down because I'm not close to my computer. I don't have a guitar in front of me and a way to record it, to kind of record this idea. Easy Band Studio is for musicians. It's a way to kind of, you know, if you're particularly good, which I'm not, at reading music, music notes and kind of knowing how to plot them out in your mind, you can use this. Or if you know nothing about that and you just want to do it by ear, you can use this as well. And it's a way of plotting out your idea for a song. The way that they do this, it looks like a little bit of a templatized version, right? Like, let's say I had a song, you know, in mind, and it required an acoustic guitar. So I go ahead and select acoustic guitar.
Tilt a little.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Anytime.
Okay, so what you see here, this is a demo song, so I'll just go ahead and hit play here. So what they've done is they've created a chord structure that kind of, you know, embodies what their song is, essentially. It sounds cheesy, right? But the point here isn't that you're composing music that you're going to listen to later. The point is that you're capturing an idea so that later, when you finally get to an acoustic guitar, you can actually lay it out and that idea is not completely lost. So if I trash this, go ahead and trash it. Maybe, oh, I see. No, you know what? I need to go new. No, don't save that project. All right, so here I am with a regular template. If I just hit one of the notes one time, nothing happens. But if I double tap it, then I go into preview mode. So this is where, if you don't necessarily read music, but you know kind of an idea in your head, you can find the note, and then you can change, you know, kind of the chord structure of it or whatever, find the right one, and then you drag it down on the timeline. And you can change the timing of it, and essentially you can just do this the whole way through. I'm just going to create something that's weird. Okay, I'll do whatever. Okay, there we go. Now I have a very basic song, essentially. It's not very good.
Oh, don't be hard on yourself.
I don't know. You know, it kind of sounds like Beck to me, man.
Yeah. Don't be hard on yourself.
It sounds good. Yeah. If I wanted to turn this, you know, say I actually really kind of envision this to be a hip-hop song. This should be funny. You activate the hip-hop machine, 4-4. You know, it's sick. Yeah, that's all I got. So there you go.
Don't do that again.
Okay, all right. Was it the word sick or was it the
It was a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Yeah. No, I felt it when I said it. I was like, oof, man, that was harsh.
But you took the risk. That's why I respect you. Yeah. I might not have liked it, but I respect it.
I put myself out there. What can I say? Flip flop. Not sure what this is going to sound like. Bleak says, I don't think they say sick in hip-hop. You're right, they don't. Okay, so there you go. There's also electronic. There's a bunch of different, you know, in the country. So there are accompaniments that in and of themselves sound kind of cheesy, but I can tell you from my own experience that sometimes something like this is exactly what you want, because you have an idea as a musician in your head and you can think of kind of the style or the focus of that particular song, you know, what instrumentation it might have or whatever. And it doesn't matter. The kind of intricate elements of it don't matter as much as just capturing the structure of the song and maybe, you know, kind of tying the structure of it together. So this is a way to kind of, you know, lay it out, and you can do it for a long, you know, kind of a longer timeline. And you can get really detailed in here. If I hit this little dot, it pulls up all of these different ways of changing your notes. And I mean, there's just a ton of them. So admittedly, this is probably better for someone who does know how to read music better than I do, which is not very much at all. It would probably be extremely useful, because then you could just look at this and be like, yeah, I need a D sharp, I need a C major, blah, 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 blah. But if you don't and you just want to tap around, that works too. See, I'm flip-flopping.
Cool. Have you ever written a song with it yet?
No.
Are you going to?
Well, I see this as not as writing a song, but as
laying the groundwork, right?
As a tool. Yeah, so if I'm out and about and I have an idea and I want to get it down real quick and I've got 2 minutes, pull up my phone, open this up, lay it out, save it, and then I've got it for later.
That's cool.
I mean, I have another way of doing this, which is with Evernote, and I just I sing the ideas, but sometimes that doesn't work.
And sometimes you look like a crazy person on the street.
I'm pretty used to looking like a crazy person on the street. Because I've been doing that method for like 3 years now, which is great because I have this like huge library of ideas that I've gotten through every day.
You should put
and
out
so a, I always have something to pull from, but this is another way of doing that.
You should put out a record of the voice notes.
Oh, no. I'm not sure I'd ever do that.
Is that genius? You guys got me? Seriously.
Yeah, no, that would be embarrassing.
That'd be awesome. I'd pay for that. I'd do a Kickstarter for that.
Oh, wait a minute. You pay for it? Okay, it's totally worth it. So there you go. It's called Easy Band Studio. Admittedly, it's not for everybody, but it's an interesting tool and could be for you if you're a musician. Now, I kind of think, Ron, my gut is that your app is more for everybody.
Well, it's for a different type of music fan. So, and Brian, I'm going to pull the audio cable. So
oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, okay. So those longtime watchers of the show, of this lovely show that we do on a weekly basis, might remember that I do own an iPad at home. I own an iPad 1. And at this point, I use that tablet for one reason and one reason alone, which is because unlike Jason, I cannot play music. I've tried to play guitar. I've tried to play drums. I've tried to learn. I just don't have it in me. I'm not that kind of person. But I do love music. I do love listening to music. And a couple of years ago, at the urging of some of my friends, somehow I stumbled into the world of, as Jason dives into the nature box.
Oh, I should have.
through the urging and suggestion of some of my friends, I became what is affectionately known as an iPad DJ.
Okay.
Through the app.
Hey, there are famous iPad DJs.
Oh, yeah, there totally are. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, a great app for on iOS called DJ by Algorithm, which I wish they would port to Android. And that has been my DJ app of choice because for 5 years now, I have been waiting for someone to come up, to step up to the mic and create an Android DJ app that was at least comparable to DJ on the iPad. There have been I can't tell you how many DJ apps I've gone through in Android that they're just weak. It's just like total, like we're talking G1 style design, you know, like just really bad, not a lot of controls.
It's that way with many music production apps on Android. Period.
Really slow. Like talk about an area that if you were an aspiring developer, get into music. You know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, there are technical issues that Google needs to address in order for that to happen.
Yeah.
By a large degree, I think your app kind of gets around it though.
Yeah. Don't ask me how. Maybe you know how. I don't know how they get around that.
All right.
But so finally I found a DJ app that I think I could jettison the iPad and just use my Android tablet to DJ on my future DJ gigs. And it is called Cross DJ. Now, interesting, it has, before I show the app itself, and Brian steals my thunder by showing it in the Google Play Store, like he does, every time, he does it on purpose, interesting business model around this app. There are two entries in the Google Play Store. There's a free app, so you can download it, give it a shot, try out some of the functionality. You're limited to 20 songs in a DJ session, though, buy that. And they have in-app purchases enabled where you can unlock that and have unlimited songs. And there are different effects that you can use in-app purchasing to buy. Or if you know you want it, there's a $9.99 version that is completely feature-full, 100% functionality, just for $10. Where I was like, oh, that's a really interesting kind of approach to it. You know, we're talking about different business models and things like that.
Yep.
If you want the full app, just pay the $10. If you want to try it, try the free one and then unlock what you need to as you need to unlock. So I actually have the app here that we can show you and I'll just pull it up. So here it comes up. And now what it is it now my only real complaint about this is that it utilizes the storage on your device. So this is where we're getting to. If I had an SD card slot, I could have an SD card filled with MP3s.
It would be your virtual record bag.
Exactly. Yeah. But in this case, I've got to move MP3s over to the thing. It doesn't connect to the Google Play Store, so there's no streaming, which I wouldn't want. Because when you're in a club scenario, you don't, you know, it's not, you know, but whatever.
Unless you could move them offline or something like that. But.
Yep. So real simple, what you got is you got two decks, right? You tap on the music icon and it goes into your file system. Here I've got a couple albums loaded up. So I'm going to queue up and I'm going to put on some New Order, right? And then what it does is it pulls in the song, and you see there it's giving you the waveform to give you an idea of what's coming up, exactly like the app that I use on iOS does. So once it's all there, I can just hit play, and it will start playing, assuming that the audio is turned up.
Yep.
All right. So what we got here is I've got my crossfader, so I'm going to move all the way over here. It's giving me the beats per minute down here is 140, right? I can stop playing.
Shut down the party. Yeah. Okay.
So now while that's playing, I want to queue up my next song, right? And so then I can just hit go back, and I'm going to go into some Pains of Being Pure at Heart. And so that's playing, and everybody at the club is dancing, and they're having a good time. Well, that's it. There we go. All right. So now if I need to queue this up, sorry. I don't have the setting turned on, but if you have a audio splitter,
uh-huh.
you can turn on the setting to allow you to have headphones on where you can queue up the second deck,
mm-hmm.
Which is, if you're a proper DJ, you absolutely need. But let's say I've queued this all up, and so I'm going to start playing this song, and then I can just do the crossfade. All right? So I can stop that if I want to do a little scratching.
Hey, there you go.
So... it's pretty much got everything as an amateur, not so great DJ that I need. It's got everything I possibly might need. So you've got control over the low and the mids and the highs, so you can adjust it for each deck, which is neat. You know, I can bring down the volume. I'm going to switch that over there. Anyway, so... they've also got a bunch of different... I haven't paid for the full app, so they've got a bunch of different audio effects and things like that that you can do through the in-app purchasing. So it gives you the control you need. Here you've got the settings, so you can record your entire set, so which is what I like to do is when I'm DJing. I just hit record when I start, so I have everything that I played. What's a great thing, actually, which is fun, is that the auto mix feature, if you're just having a party at your house and you've got all your music loaded on your tablet, you just press auto mix and it will basically DJ the party for you. Question in the chat room, it will adjust the pitch to match the sync of the song. So for example, here we see this one is 140.8 beats per minute. This song is 80 beats per minute. I can press sync on here and it will adjust to match as needed. And then you can also control through this area here, which I forget how. Sorry, live demo. But anyway, so you've got control over pitch and that sort of thing. So it allows you to do that. Kind of. A lot of people. I don't particularly subscribe to the play a song that match the beats per minute or move. I just play the songs I want to hear, so mm-hmm. I don't really pay a ton of attention to that. But you can adjust the sync and that sort of thing. So, see, that's adjusted.
So that's pitched up right now?
That's pitched up to match. Yeah. So.
Poor Schmuck in the chat room says, that's why no one dances at your parties.
Now, I never said I was a good DJ. I just am a amateur DJ. But, but yeah. And you can skip within the songs there. So there
oh, cool.
I don't know why that's not playing. But anyway, yeah, there it is. Anyway. So yeah. So there you go. So Cross DJ, it is the DJ app that I'm going to be using from here on out as I get a little more familiar with it. I literally just found it last night, so I need to figure out some of the ins and outs of it and all that sort of stuff.
Get all those effects.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you use the effects on DJ stuff like that?
You understand. I am as low maintenance of a DJ as possible. I just play some good songs. And I let them run through. I don't do a lot of the scratching. I don't do in and out.
There's nothing wrong
with
that.
Just play the songs. I was actually in, of all places, I was in Vegas at a club and someone was supposed to book a DJ that night and they didn't. And so right before the party, they turned to me and said, you brought your iPad, right? And then I ended up DJing a 3.5-hour set at a party.
Holy cow.
That was awesome. Like it was one of those. It was at a club at the Hard Rock. It was at the Hard Rock in Vegas.
How does this happen to people I know?
I was in the DJ booth was above the dance floor. So I'm looking down at everybody. And the moment you press play on a song that everybody goes nuts for and starts dancing, it was a big thrill.
Yeah, it is.
So so that's why I like DJing. It's fun. And then there's a club in New York that every now and then I DJ stuff at too. And it's not really a dance club. It's more of a kind of a hardcore punk kind of club, and so play more fun stuff that way. But
you don't need to match tempos on
exactly.
Hardcore
no, you just
punk.
Let it go. Yeah, exactly. So, but
you
yeah,
can just cut it in on a hardcore punk, and it'll be fine.
Yeah. So Cross DJ, I mean, try the free version, check it out. The full version's got everything you need. Just $10. Honestly, it's worth it. So
I mean, I saw some people kind of in the chat room like $10. No way. But I think the $10 version of the app is appealing to a certain kind of target audience. Obviously it's not everybody, but some people would find value in a $10 app that does this well, because honestly on Android there really isn't a whole lot. And if the quality of the effects that are built into it and all that kind of stuff that you do get for that extra cost are worth it, then
it's funny because I downloaded,
I mean, on iPad these apps cost $20. Certain ones of them are very expensive.
And then I downloaded the free app, and then I paid I think $1.99 or $2.99 to unlock the 20 song limit. And then I saw another one was an app purchase. And then I discovered the full price app. And I'm like, oh, I should have just thought I paid for the full price app, because I'm going to do it anyway. So, $10 is not that bad. So, so there you go. Check it out. Cross DJ. If you're looking for a great Android DJ solution, I think we have it.
I failed to mention that my app also is a paid app. It's $3.99. So
there you go.
This is a all music, yes, you pay for it, app arena. All right. So you can vote for your favorite app from this week's arena. It's practically like flipping a coin at this point. Who's going to win? Because there's only two of us in the arena this week. And if you go to aaapoll.com/158, you can vote for your favorite. Cross DJ and EC Band Studio are pretty much neck and neck right now with 15 total votes. So, this could go either way, folks. I feel like we say that every week.
It really can, though.
But it is true. Yep. All right. That is it for this episode of All About Android. Super sad that Gina couldn't be here today, but she will hopefully be back next week. So we'll see about her and her hopefully improving health for next week. Ron, it was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Where can people find you?
People can find me over at about.me/RonXO. Where you can find links to my Twitter and my Instagram and Google Plus and all that fun stuff. I just updated my cover photos across my social media. So if you go to google.com/+RonRichards, you can see my new sexy cover photo.
Ooh. And then Twitter just updated their
Twitter
profile.
Just updated. Literally, I updated the cover photo before the profile got updated. So now
you got updated again.
Well, I just got to readjust the cropping or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And if Ryan was a good TD, he would have pulled it up by now. So there you go. Yeah,
I'm limited by the speed of our internet.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's better on Google Plus. Go to Google Plus.
No, I like the Twitter one.
That's my new favorite moment in Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo says, "It's not my fault." So, yeah, that's pretty much summing up my life these days. I like how he searches Google as opposed to just typing. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, see?
There you go.
Looking good and sexy. And so, additionally, by day, I'm over at imagecomics.com, where you check out the best image, the best comic books on the market. In fact, we were nominated for 20 Eisner Awards, which is the comic book industry's Oscars, and that's pretty exciting. And actually, if all goes as well, next week when I'm at the show, we should launch something that will be very interesting to our audience if you're into comic books and into digital stuff and things like that, reading your comics digitally, if you're looking for a good deal. So next week, hopefully, I'll have something to brag about. So,
all right. I hope that you do.
Yep.
Awesome. Brian, what about you?
Me? Huh?
What about you? And I'm gonna eat some sriracha roasted cashews.
Right into the mic there. Well, you can follow me on Thursdays. I do a show called Know How with Padre. So that's always a lot of fun. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm @cranky_hippo. I recently changed my cover too.
Except you didn't upgrade your profile.
No.
It's not as cool as mine.
Well, not a sellout.
That looks like an old
whoa,
profile.
Whoa. Did he just say I'm not a sellout?
Hey. I just,
He's not saying anything about you. He's just saying something about him.
Yeah. Myself, yeah. Not you, Ron. That's
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's about it. Oh, and I've been going through Twin Peaks, so I don't know if anyone here has watched that show, but I've been posting things about that because
yeah,
it is fascinating.
Twin Peaks is awesome.
Sadly, I remember watching it when it was on, like broadcast.
Oh,
the first time.
Yeah, you're old.
It's a Netflix thing for me now.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir. And you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. If you want to find my music, you can find it at yellowgoldmusic.com. And yeah, that's pretty much about it. So that's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail. Send us, you know, your voice in the form of a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us an email at aaa@twit.tv. You can find our show on Twitter. It's at Android Show. We are on Google Plus. Just search for the community or the account, just All Bad Android. You'll find us. Reddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. Show notes and past episodes found, of course, at twit.tv/AAA. You can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
No.